We're zooming in this morning on a single community in West Africa, like so many others devastated by Ebola. It's the village of Bakedu, a community cut from the forest in remote Liberia. The community has been declared Ebola-free, but the trauma and pain are still there. Here's the village chief, Musa Kamara.
Life is not back to normal. It's not back to normal because you lose 10% out of 12. You lose 10% out of 15. If my neighbor not happy, I'm not happy.
He's talking about his neighbors, a family who lost 10 people. In all, 150 people died in Bakedu. NPR photographer John Poole was there recently. He brought back images and sounds from the community. What is this?
So this is children playing here in the foreground. In the background is a call to prayer. It's a Muslim town. It's about 6,000 people. It feels much smaller. And right in the center of town is a big mosque. And this is the call to prayer that you'll hear many times a day.
And as you wrote about online, it felt in a way like life had returned to some sort of normalcy. It was Ebola-free. That was the first impression. But you began to get a different impression as you spent some time there.
Yeah, I did. It took some time, but slowly I began to realize what was going on below the surface. People were really hungry. There was very little food because when Ebola hit, it was right after planting season. So all of the weeding and tending of the rice fields that had to happen didn't happen. So they were extremely hungry.
There was one woman who, it looked like there were photos that you had of her with bananas that she wanted to show you. Who was that and what did she tell you?
Yeah, Mamwede Kane is her name. I was visiting her, photographing her one time. She held up some green bananas, and I didn't really understand what she was trying to tell me at the time. But it was only later that I realized what she was trying to say is that's all she has to eat. And she was married to the second imam in town. He had four other wives. She calls them her mates. His son was the one who brought Ebola to the town. So essentially, her family was ground zero for this outbreak. And she described at one point she was on the floor crying on one side of the room. She had relatives dying and some dead in the room. No one else in the town would come near. They didn't know it was Ebola, but it was some terrifying disease. So she's alone in this house with all these little kids just crying. And she just describes being semi-conscious, just not knowing what to do. Should I care for the living or should I care for the dead? That might seem like an obvious choice for us, but in that culture, it's extremely important to take care of your dead and your relatives and your ancestors. And that was part of, beyond the food shortage, what we saw was a real trauma centered around losing loved ones and not being able to say goodbye to them properly.
What does she say about her life now?
Now she essentially is living hand to mouth, and she's trying to reassimilate her children back into the village because for a long time the villagers were terrified of them because they knew that her and these kids came from what was really a very sick, disease-ridden area. So there was a lot of stigma, and it took a lot of time for the town to get used to them. But also these kids, some of them very young, became terrified of strangers because these strangers would be mean to them and, you know, shun them.
You know, John, it just strikes me listening to you describe this woman. She's doing so much of this on her own. Now that this community has been declared Ebola-free, are they still getting help from the outside to sort of deal with the aftermath?
There is aid that's coming in. It doesn't seem terribly coordinated, and it doesn't seem to be enough. The chief is saying now that one of his main problems is an aid group will come in with, say, you know, a certain amount of food and give it out to the first 10 or 20 families. The rest of the town is just heartbroken. And it's creating a lot of tension in the town trying to figure out how to smooth things over in the community and how to work with the aid groups to coordinate this help so that it doesn't become this divisive issue.
John, thanks a lot.
Sure.
That's NPR photographer John Poole, who worked with producer Sammy Yenigan on the multimedia project that's at our website.